Well, we definitely miss y'all. Welcome on to a Sunday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. Danny, what's up?
Excited to do another 30 and 60.
Yes, that's what we're doing. That seemed like it was pretty popular last time, and it's also just for our own personal understanding, a great way to make sure that we go around and have at least somewhat of a thumb on the pulse of what's going on with all 30 teams. But before we do that, let's get to some news. First of all, it sounds like Brooke Lopez has avoided another injury to that right foot, which he had to leave the game due to soreness because of. And he should be back now on Wednesday per Woj. So they can now continue their march to 0-82, losing by 10 instead of 15.
Yeah, I think you said it better. We'll move on to Bradley Beal, which unfortunately we do not have a ton of news other than that he had a potential injury. It was late in the game against the Hawks. I think he was diving for a loose ball, and he got inadvertently kneed by Jeff Teague, and they were going for x-rays, I believe, and as of this recording, we haven't heard the results.
Yeah, and he supposedly couldn't move that shoulder at all in the locker room afterwards, so that would be a big trouble, obviously, for Washington, which has really struggled with its depth as is. I guess that's kind of one of the downsides when you're kind of trying to keep the books clear going into the future to attract a certain free agent. But hopefully he's okay because he's actually off to a great start of the season. Another guy who's off to a great start was Damari Carroll. He missed tonight's game against the Heat. Because of plantar fasciitis, and that obviously is an injury that can kind of linger, and they really missed his energy as well as they got smashed by the Heat's second unit in that game.
Yeah, and then Kendrick Perkins, he's out. I think I saw 2 to 3 months with a torn pectoral muscle, which was sustained against the Warriors.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's torn or pulled or strained or whatever, but he'll be out for a while. I think now that Ashik, I don't know whether he's back yet or not. Ajinsa is back, mm-hmm. though. I mean, I don't think that's really going to hurt them very much. It might just be more of an impetus for them to try and play a little bit smaller. I mean, they have a lot of problems, as we'll get to, but Kendrick Perkins, I don't think, was necessarily the answer to any of them. And then the last little bit of news, Arne Tellem left Wasserman for becoming a big wig with the Detroit Pistons, and then his son Mike Tellem also left, and now a ton of clients have also left there. That includes Al Horford, both Gasol brothers, Danilo Gallinari, Jabari Parker announced this week. So that's be interesting to see where all of them end up landing. All right, so then before we move on to the 30 and 60, I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, DraftKings.com. Unlike the other leading brand of daily fantasy sports, they have more lineup flexibility for your daily fantasy basketball. On the other leading brand, you have to pick 2 point guards, 2 shooting guards, 2 small forwards, a power forward, and 1 center. On DraftKings, you have a lot more flexibility, and you have a utility position. So you get some more creativity in setting your lineup. Also, lineups on the other leading brand lock as soon as the first game tips off. And on DraftKings, you can adjust your lineups for later games. So if you picked a West Coast player as a late scratch, you can take him out of your lineup, replace him with an active player. Or if you just didn't get to it until later on and you wanted to put in guys in the West Coast games, you can do that. So DraftKings is just a really fun way to enjoy watching basketball, to pick your lineup, make a fair amount of cash, or even for free playing against your friends. It's really a lot of fun. And you don't have to do it for the entire season. You can just do it for one day. It's not so inscrutable the way that season-long fantasy basketball is. You don't have to set your lineup every day. You can just really concentrate, study the matchups for that one day, and have a good time as you watch the games as you normally would. So you can use the promo code CAPSPACE, that's no space in between, all one word, at DraftKings.com, and you can play for free with your first deposit. You can remember that easily because we talk about CAPSPACE all the time on the program. All right, let's start from the bottom this time because just the natural tendency is to kind of speed up as you get to the end. Start with the Washington Wizards. And my note for them is we're seeing, as usual, they just are no good without John Wall on the floor. He is plus 4.0 per 100 possessions. And when Sessions is on the floor without him, they are negative 17.8 per 100 possessions. That's not all Sessions' fault. A lot of it is the fact that they have some injuries, that the bench doesn't really have anything in the way of creators. And it's always been a problem. They'll try to run Beal out there and let him be the primary creator. And although he's having a better season, isn't quite able to power them to efficient offense. And also, of course, they miss his defense as well, since he's one of the best defensive point guards.
He is, and the best shot-blocking point guard of all time. But we should also talk about Otto Porter. Porter is, I call it the Harrison Barnes effect. He's shooting very well, but he's not shooting a ton of shots.
Yeah, he's still at only a 14% usage, which is about where he was last year, even during the playoffs. And it's progress that he's been a good starter who can be efficient, at least in his small role, but they still kind of need a little bit more creativity. But you had a note about the Chris Humphreys stretch four experiment.
Sure. So his numbers have been pretty good. I mean, he's shooting, I believe it's 39% on threes, which is remarkable, and about half of his shots have been threes. But there have been moments where that has been a big problem. And the one that I was saying, I watched the Hawks-Wizards game, and I believe it was at the beginning of the fourth quarter, that the Hawks basically made their defensive strategy, let Chris Humphreys beat us. He missed three in a row that were all deep twos or threes, and I believe it was a 6-0 or 8-0 run that helped kind of set the tone for that, and then the Wizards just had trouble coming back from it. So teams, I think, are going to get better at that, and his shooting is unsustainable.
Yeah, that's true. I don't expect him to be shooting 39% on threes all of a sudden after basically never taking them before. You'd hope if he could get to 35%, that would be pretty decent. But the problem, of course, is that you have to actually guard him out there, and as you noted, teams haven't really adjusted to that quite yet. The Utah Jazz, this team has been killing it. I want to say that they're either second or third in net rating right now. They beat Memphis by home at last night, which was that was a joke, by the way, that they're only favored by one at home against Memphis last night when Memphis is really struggling. And my note about them really is just how good Derek Favors has been. He's sort of Gobert burst out on the scene last year. Hayward was the one who got a little bit of lower-end all-star buzz and took a big leap offensively last year. Favors didn't play quite as many minutes, so he doesn't have the raw stats that Hayward has. He didn't have the ball in his hands all the time. But he really is the guy who's been essential to what they're doing because he's able to bludgeon guys down low on the block offensively, but he still is quick enough, and he can also play backup center as well, but he's still quick enough to get out on most of the guys that he's had to guard at the three-point line. And so teams, we thought that maybe we'd see a lot more teams go small against the Jazz. They would put their center on Favors and then guard Gobert with a small guy and then run those guys around all the court on the defensive end. And Utah has been locking everyone down so far.
And that they've been doing this while their offense is still sputtering sometimes is really an accomplishment because they've played some talented teams and their defense has sustained them through those patches.
Yeah, I shouldn't say they're locking everyone down because they did. Portland had a real nice night against them, but and that was a situation where on the pick and roll, both Gobert and Favors had to get out really far against McCollum and Lillard, and that opened a lot of things up. But those guys are going to cause problems for pretty much any team when they're hitting.
Yeah, and they had a little bit of a struggle in the second half against the Grizzlies, but the game was already, I think, a 20-point game. So I don't usually criticize a team too much for that as long as they end up pulling it out pretty cleanly.
Yeah, actually, I saw something in Pelton's chat on Friday that I didn't realize. I didn't realize that ESPN's RPM stat, which obviously is kind of a black box, we don't know exactly what's in it, actually adjusts for performance. It weights performance and blowouts less highly. So I think that's I'm sure they have a good statistical reason for doing that, and it kind of makes sense because you see a lot of teams kind of let up when there's a blowout or you're just not playing against the best guys. So I understand that. The Raptors, defense has been better. The Carroll injury obviously is going to hurt them. We'll see how long he's out for, but plantar fasciitis, I think really it's the type of thing where unless you rest for like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, it doesn't really go away if you're trying to play every day. And Carroll, I think for big guys, it's a little easier to deal with because you're not quite having to move your feet as much and you're just it's not quite as much of a lateral sport if you're a big guy. But for a small guy like Carroll, it's going to be, I think, a pretty big problem.
And something else that you noted that I'd been thinking during that game today against the Heat is their teams are basically letting Chris Joseph shoot twos, especially deep twos, and he just doesn't have
Corey Joseph.
And yeah. he just doesn't have the confidence to hit him yet, and that's really hurting them because if the team can help off and not face any ill consequences, then they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, and they've liked to play Joseph, DeRozan, and Lowry together at the end of games when the other team doesn't have a three that's going to just kill DeRozan on post-ups. And I think when teams really start helping off of Joseph, he just will not take a spot-up three-pointer. And I don't know whether he can hit him or not, but he's not even taking him, and teams are helping off of him with impunity right now. But overall, it's been pretty successful for the Raptors. They lost two in a row in Florida at the end of a long road trip. They had a nice turn in Oklahoma City, and then they beat Dallas on the road before that. So I think this team is doing well. They're where they need to be, but if Carroll's going to be out for a while, then they could be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of summarizing it, that I think they're firmly in the playoff picture, but if you're thinking about them, you know, really pushing for, like, the one seed, I think that's unrealistic right now.
So the Spurs have really struggled offensively so far. They are, well, I shouldn't say really struggled. They are 10th in offense and 3rd in defense, but 10th is not as good as you might hope. They typically get better throughout the course of the year. But I am seeing a few troubling things with them, and I haven't had a chance to watch as many of their games as I would have liked so far. But LaMarcus is shooting about 30% from mid-range. I think that'll improve. They can count on him doing better. Kawhi, however, people giving him this MVP buzz, they're going to have to calm down a little bit. He's not going to sustain what he's doing offensively. He's shooting right now 52% from 3 to 10 feet, 58% from 10 to 16 feet, and 48% from 16 to 23. And basically, no one shoots those percentages from any of those places, unless you're Dirk Nowitzki over a long period of time. So that, I think, is going to regress. He also somehow never really gets to the line. He only has a 14% free throw rate. And, you know, if you're a big scorer, you want to have that kind of 30% or higher. And, he's also at a 28% usage rate right now, which is enormous.
And he had a 30.7 free throw rate last year, 0.307, and that was by far the highest of his career. So you always wonder if that's the aberration.
Yeah, maybe that's so. But I think he's just been kind of living in the mid-range. Yeah. And the other problem with that is he has 6 assists all year. And when you have that 28% usage rate and only 6 assists, like, that's just not good enough. And part of that, I think, is because he's taking so many mid-rangers that he's not causing help to occur to where people are open, and he's not getting penetration. But he also just has to get better at passing the ball. And maybe that's all part of the process with him. But I think when you look at him and then Aldridge, who has 13 assists on the year, as well as he's really their only other guy who is a big usage player at 24%, he's not exactly some awesome passer either. And so I think they just are because those two guys they're running the offense through those two guys, you don't have the kind of beautiful ball movement, drive and kick aspect that they've had so far. And also the other problem is Danny Green just can't hit a shot for them right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. You want to move on to the Kings?
Do I have to?
Yeah, well, I think what the Kings did in the game against the Warriors on Saturday is they tried hard and they got really lucky, but they still couldn't pull it out. But I've been impressed with the degree to which they played without Cousins, because I think we both expected that if he missed time, they were just dead in the water. And they haven't won, but they've looked better than I expected.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, so, yeah, they had the second half against the Clippers in that game that he missed, which was okay. They kind of brought them down to the wire. Then they got blown out 2 games in a row at home to Memphis, which is looking like a really bad loss considering how Memphis has played. Then they got blown out on the road by 20 at Phoenix.
Yep.
And then, you know, that Houston without Dwight Howard, you know, they ended up losing by like about 10 in that game. And that's, you know, that's a home game and Houston's not playing incredibly well. And then the Warriors, you know, they ended up losing by whatever it was, like 8 or something. They were kind of in the game at the end. They played hard, whatever. But the Warriors missed, did you say it was like the most 3-point shots that anyone's ever missed in a win?
Yeah.
As far as you could determine?
As far as I could determine using Basketball Reference, it was tied the record for the most misses in a 3-point misses in a win in NBA history at 31.
And they weren't taking bad shots either. Like, those are wide open shots, and by good shooters too. Like, Curry missed a bunch of wide open ones. Barnes missed a bunch of wide open ones. Clay was okay. He was the only one who even hit like a reasonable percentage.
And they were dying before the very end of the game. I think they hit their last two. They were below 15% from three for most of the second half.
Yeah, like that should have been a 20-point loss for them if the Warriors just hit like three more shots, three more three-pointers, which they should have given how open they were. So, I would say that they have not been playing particularly well. I do like the fact that now they've been starting Gay at power forward. I think that Gay really basically is a power forward, even offensively, right now, because he doesn't have the quickness to go by guys anymore. And he actually, he can even have some post-up success against fours sometimes. Like, he posted up Draymond Green, like, pretty well at times. And he can still shoot the ball. It remains to be seen what happens, how often they go when Cousins come back. But I think Carl is showing his true colors that he's inclined to play small most of the time. Another unencouraging thing here for the Kings is that Ben McLemore is kind of moving to not really being a starting level player anymore and is, you know, getting like 15 minutes a game off the bench now.
And that's huge because this is a team that needs depth, especially when they're dealing with the rash of injuries that they've been dealing with right now. Not just Cousins, Collison missed the game against the Warriors. Seth Curry, I believe, has barely played, if played at all. And they just need guys. And if he's not hitting shots and not playing good defense, then that really guts them. Though, but I think Bellinelli's played reasonably well.
Yeah, he's been okay. And I think I understand a little bit why you need him with that starting unit, because aside from Rondo, they don't necessarily have anybody else who can pass the ball at all. Gay is just a complete black hole. I mean, I think Seth has had stats that he's passed the ball on like 5% of all of his drives over the past 2 years, and that's continuing again this year. So that's really ugly. I mean, Rondo will pass the ball, but then there's no one to kind of keep the ball moving. McLemore is not a good passer. He can't put the ball on the floor really either. He's just kind of a standstill shooter offensively, whereas Bellinelli at least is a high IQ guy, still a better shooter than McLemore as well, and a guy who can at least attack off the dribble just a little bit. So I think he is a better fit with the starters, but McLemore is this guy who's, you know, supposed to be your long-term starting two alongside Cousins. He was the number 7 pick, and now it looks like, you know, you're getting a backup for him basically at this point.
Yeah, so we'll move on to the Blazers, which have just run this supremely strange offense, which I think is attributable to their unusual talent.
Yeah, they have. I think they're going to regress a little bit. I mean, they're shooting in a couple of ways. But, I mean, obviously, what McCollum and Lillard can do, having those two guys now who can pull up from three off the pick and roll, that's something that really compromises your defense. I can't think of anyone else in the league that has two guys like that that are real threats to pull up off the dribble on the pick and roll in that way and are going to hit it to the point where, especially in Lillard's case, I mean, Lillard is probably the closest thing to Steph Curry where you really have to get your bigs up and out on him on the pick and roll. So I don't want to discount what they're doing. I think that there is definitely a sustainable aspect with those two guys, but they are shooting 48% from mid-range. That's as a team. That's not going to hold up. They're shooting 46% in the paint, but non-restricted area. That's also actually, when you think of being in the paint as a good shot, but generally, if you're not in the restricted area, that's a tough floater or a post-up or something. Those are actually pretty hard shots. The league shoots about 40% on those. They're shooting 46%. Though they are only shooting, I think, 55% in the restricted area. A lot of that's probably because those guards are not amazing, amazing finishers. And then they're also, opponents are only shooting 28% on threes, and that's going to regress back towards the mean as well. Well, they are shooting 37% as a team, and I don't buy that guys like Harkless and Aminu, who are shooting as well as they are going to continue to do that. So I do like what Portland has done. Their defense has been much better than I think anyone would have anticipated so far, even when you consider the fact that they're getting lucky and the opponents miss threes. But they're not going to keep playing this way to have, you know, like whatever is like the fifth best net rating in the league or something.
One other thing I wanted to mention is I'm trying to remember which game it was, but Myers-Leonard did a nice job passing the ball, and I was impressed with that. He has more tools in his toolbox than I expected, which is very useful for a guy who is an unusual pick-and-pop player.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about that on Thursday's program. So Phoenix, they're really struggling at small forward right now. P.J. Tucker, while he's shooting okay, he has a 9% usage rate, which essentially means that teams are not guarding him at all. And when you have him in the starting lineup with a 9% usage rate, Tyson Chandler, never a high usage player, he's 11%. Now you're distributing a ton of tough shots between Markieff Morris, who has been miserable from the field so far, 41% true shooting, Bledsoe, and Brandon Knight. I think that all three of those guys are a little bit overtaxed for what they are, to have that kind of a usage, and none of them have succeeded in being efficient, and that maybe if you had a guy who's a little bit more of a threat, that might be helped. The problem is, if you're going to go to TJ Warren, he also has been taking kind of a lot of tough shots, long twos, hasn't been as efficient as I would have hoped from him. So I think that they need either more creators or more spacing offensively, but the defense has been pretty good for this team.
Yeah, they're still top 10 in defense, 97.9 points per 100 possessions. And what I'm wondering with them is, we've talked, you know, about their issues this week and last week, how do they get better during this season?
Yeah, you're saying, like, because they're just
internal development. Yeah, they don't have a ton of talent. I mean, they have some guys that are underperforming relative to expectations, but not. I don't see a situation like with LaMarcus shooting 30% on mid-range shots. I don't see anything when I've watched them that goes, oh, well, this is going to be so much better, and that will make them more competitive.
Yeah, Markieff will start playing better.
That's true.
I think that they, you know, Devin Booker obviously is really young, but he can shoot the ball. And in his limited minutes, he's done well. Probably most of that's blowouts, but still. Sonny Weems, who was also supposed to be a potential option off the bench, EuroLeague veteran. I actually like that signing for the room exception. He's been awful so far. He has a negative one PER in 58 minutes and hasn't been able to hit a shot. So they're struggling to kind of get more scoring outside of those three core guys of Knight, Bledsoe, and Morris, and more shooting as well. Maybe Booker will be a potential answer. And John Luehr has been okay as well, since he's in the rotation instead of Teletovic, who's a little bit older than you think. He's 30, so, and he missed, obviously, most of the last year. So maybe it makes sense that Luehr is in the rotation instead of him, since he's not playing that well.
The Sixers still haven't won a game, but I've seen some real positive signs from them, especially Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, what have you liked about those guys?
Well, Jahlil, his touch is still there. You know, like, I still am frustrated sometimes he doesn't get the position. I think it's been a little bit better than that first week where it felt like he was always getting the ball, like, 18 feet out. But he has such touch that it doesn't really matter, and I still love him as a passer. And Noel, his ability to affect the other team's offense and get steals, there was one play that really stuck with me. I don't remember which game it was in, where he just hung around in the backcourt and forced the turnover just by putting his hand where he knew the pass was going to be. And you almost never see that after a make or a miss, where a guy just does that in the middle of a game.
Yeah, he obviously is one of the best kind of steel mavens of big guys to come along in a while. My thoughts on Okafor, I agree with you that he has showed some very, very encouraging signs. He's been getting good post position on a lot of plays, especially when he's going against guys like, for example, Dwayne Dedman started for the Magic the other day in Nikola Vucevic's absence, and he couldn't handle him. Okafor was able to get deep position. He was able to drive baseline on him and kind of knock him back and score a lot of the times. The jump shot looks better than we thought from Okafor as well, facing up, and that really has helped his face-up game, where he can either shoot the jump shot if you lay off him, or if you get up close, all he has to do is just get a little bit of a shoulder past you, and then because he's so big, he can kind of knock the guy backwards and get a bucket. He's had like a lefty hook coming across the lane. His left hand has looked better than I recall it being in college, and I always knew he had the left hand. He just wasn't using it as much. I think he's been outstanding, and he's hitting his free throws too. He's been including the preseason, I think he's at about 70%. That was a big concern, and I thought that his form kind of being up on his toes was something that he could fix, and I don't know if that's been what he's fixed, but I wasn't as concerned about his free throws as a lot of people, and I think the early results, at least, are good on that.
Yeah, one of the surprise teams of this week so far, I would say, has been the Orlando Magic, who ended up winning their last...
Oh, no, I wasn't... I was trying to... I had some more on the Sixers.
Oh, sorry.
Do we have to change yet? Yeah, this is... We want to get all of these really bad teams out of the way early in the year because, you know, like, once February comes around, we're just going to, like...
You and I have very different philosophies on this.
Yeah, well, you just love watching teams tank to see whether they're going to keep their protected pick or not, don't you?
Well, and I think sometimes it can be a nice chance to see young guys against starters. Like, I think they're going to play Stauskas, I believe, more and against first units later, which I think will teach us a little bit more about where he is.
Yeah, Stauskas actually has had some okay moments getting to the bucket. I thought he had a pretty decent game against Cleveland the other night. I can't remember if it was the first or second time that they played Cleveland recently, but he's got a quick release three-pointer. He was able to get to the basket a little bit as well in some encouraging fashion. I mean, he still, of course, is terrible defensively, but just to at least for him to show something was at least a little bit encouraging. A couple more notes on Okafor, though. He's shooting 56% true shooting and 26% usage. You see those two stats together and you think, wow, this guy must be killing it in the box score stats. But he only has a 16 PR, and that's because he does absolutely nothing in the box score but score. He has a 9% overall rebound percentage.
Wow.
If there's 10 guys on the court, your overall rebound percentage should be 10%. So he's below average as a center for an NBA player. And granted, Noel gets a lot of rebounds, but it's not like he's doing some awesome job of boxing out or anything. I would hope he could do a little bit more on the offensive glass as well. And the hope was that they would sort of get him to play harder by playing him in shorter stints, but he's actually playing almost 35 minutes a game because, you know, he's been good and they need him to. They're trying to win games. So that I think that plan might be kind of out the window now. And so he has been really good on the fast break. That was always something that he was really good at. So, that has been the Jahlil Okafor report for the Sixers. Oh, and the Sixers still have the worst turnover percentage in the league, and they're playing a lot differently, I think, because of Okafor, too. They are in the mid-20s in three-point attempt rate when they were really high last year, even though they weren't hitting any of them. They're trying to play the Morey ball style, and they're playing in the mid-20s in pace as well when they were playing really fast pace last year, too. And part of their problem has been that Covington has been out. I mean, it's going to be a while, I think, still before they win a game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a while, too. Now, are you ready to talk about the Magic?
Yeah, I did all that research. I had to vomit it all out. Who knows when we'll get back to the Sixers.
One thing I want to say about the Magic that I thought was startling, considering how young a team they are, is that they've lost four times by a combined total of 14 points, and they've already played three overtimes, so two in one game, one in another game. And that's pretty impressive for a team that you think has kind of blowout potential in the negative sense.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, you could say also that they are kind of struggling to close out games, but you know, that could have just be noise and just a few games like that. A few notes that I had on them. Guess what? Nikola Vucevic went out for two games. They won both games, and they played great defense in both games against like two actually pretty decent teams.
Yeah, who knew post defense actually matters.
So it's not post defense. I think it's more of a help.
Yeah, interior. Sorry.
Aspect. Yeah. Yeah. So, and Dwayne Debin has been, I mean, granted they beat the Sixers, but they did beat, who else did they beat? Oh yeah. They beat the Raptors at home. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice win for them when the Raptors had been undefeated, and they're playing a lot better defensively. One big problem that I'm worried about though for them is Elfrid Payton. Everyone else that gets major minutes for them has like pretty decent on-off numbers. And last I checked, I think this was before last night's game, Payton had an 88 individual, offensive rating when he's on the floor, and like like 115 defensive rating when he's on the floor. And so, his shooting still has been terrible. He's mired in the 30s. Again, he's more willing to take them, but still teams are just not guarding him at all. And he really, in that Toronto game, he gave way to C.J. Watson, who actually was excellent, and they're playing much better when Watson is on the floor just to get a little bit more shooting there. So that's still something to watch. Like, Peyton is at, with his individual skills, everything but his shooting, he's a wonderful player. You think he has some great potential, but the shooting thing hasn't been solved yet. And maybe it will. He's made some steps, but at this point, you have to wonder about whether he's even the best option if they're trying to win games. So that's going to be something to monitor, how they do offensively when he's on the floor.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Oklahoma City. We have seen some odd lineups from Coach Brooks' event.
We really have, and that's something that there was a great conversation going on Twitter today about that, about how college coaches transfer to the NBA and how few success stories there are for partially that reason.
Yeah, and I do think that really this now is – there's a new kind of jag of those. There weren't any for a long, long time because you had guys like Calipari and Lon Kruger and Mike Montgomery who came in sort of in the late 90s, early 2000s and all failed. Rick Pitino was another one. And so I think that they got away from that. And then Stevens – who, you know, as Bob Vulgaris would say, is the exception that proves the rule, at least in his opinion, came in and did really well, although I still think he even kind of struggles a little bit with some of the lineups that he does. But the biggest difference I see between college, other than just simply the motivational aspects and the interpersonal aspects, and I think it's telling that, you know, all three of the guys that have brought in are not your sort of, like, typical college screamer, like, asshole coaches, but the biggest difference other than that aspect is you have to manage rotations and send out lineups that really make sense and pair your guys together more. And NBA teams are built in a much more cohesive way than college teams are when you just recruit the best players you can and then throw your guys out there and hope that they don't get in foul trouble and kind of see what happens. In the NBA, you have guys who are acquired to play specific roles because they fit together in a certain way, and every lineup sort of has to check off a certain number of boxes on as far as shooting, passing, rim protection, etc. And I think that both Hoiberg and Donovan so far have struggled in putting out some lineups that don't quite fit together and check all the boxes that you need to check for an NBA lineup.
And one challenge that they've had, and it's too early to really delve into on-off stuff, especially when you're comparing players with other players, but the OKC's been respectable. They've had a defense rating of 102.3 when Serge Ibaka's been on the floor and Enes Kanter has not, but with both of them on the floor, it's been 115.9. And so the idea behind that was that Ibaka was such a positive defensive force that it would prop them up, but if that's not true, that changes the way teams think about the Thunder. That changes everything.
Well, you think about just what this team is defensively. I think Russell Westbrook at this point is kind of a negative defensive player with the amount of freelancing he does. I mean, if he gets really locked in, and he's a good post defender too, like if you try and post him up with a bigger guy, he'll give great effort and stop you there. But his level of effort on a minute-by-minute basis and just how locked in he is pretty low. Durant's okay, but he still has to be kind of a primary scorer. He's not going to be a stopper on the wing. Robertson can't play that many minutes, so now you're going with Waiters, who is, you know, at best okay and probably worse than that. Kanter obviously is a disaster. Adams has been hurt a little bit. Ibaka is pretty good, but maybe a little, you know, certainly athletically, maybe his intelligence is not quite as amazing as, you know, some of the absolute best defensive big men out there. So the personnel maybe isn't that amazing. And then when you look at Donovan and his staff, they don't really have like a defensive guru type there either. And so, you know, maybe we just shouldn't expect this team to be that great defensively.
Yeah, that would be weird because they've been pretty strong relatively the last couple
of years. Yeah, Scott, I mean, that was always the biggest thing that Scott Brooks ever got enough credit for, was the fact that he got them to defend.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had Ron Adams there for a time, too. I'm sure that helped in establishing some good principles. That was before, I think, Adams came back and to Chicago and worked with Tibbs. But, yeah, I mean, maybe that's going to be a problem for the Thunder, and it's going to keep it on. Also, I would say this, you know, we're talking about the on-off stuff. Again, this is not gospel. It is not this is absolutely how good this guy is. It's just, hey, you know what? The team has not been playing well with these combinations out there. And when you combine that with, okay, there is a rational reason to think that these wouldn't have worked to begin with, then you have to start to say, I'm going to adjust my opinion or maybe try something else. Whereas, you know, if it's not working that well, but you think it would have worked and you have reason to think that it will work, then maybe you stick with it. But when those two things combine, bad performance, even over this course of a game, you watch the film, you see why it's not working. Those are the times when I think you can make some use of that sort of information, even if it's not the largest sample size in the world.
Sure, it's a point. I think you can't read too much into it, but it is something to consider. Just don't put a ton of weight in it, especially not this early.
So the Knicks benefited from Derek Fisher getting ejected, at least some a couple of the report was that he lobbed off three F-bombs in succession and to get ejected. But a couple of my Twitter followers suggested that maybe Fisher getting thrown out was a good thing because they didn't close with Sasha Vujicic and they actually beat the Lakers today. So Vujicic has been horrendous. There's no reason for him to be even in the NBA, not to mention starting. They even ran like a curl play for him off a double screen for a three to open the third quarter today. It's just remarkable. Even with Aflalo out, the hope will be that when Aflalo comes back, Vujicic will be not only out of the starting lineup, but out of the starting rotation, out of the rotation completely. And Galloway has been pretty good. So, you know, I see, and shooting better than Vujicic as well, which is the one thing that you could say maybe Vujicic adds over Galloway. So there's really just no reason to be playing Vujicic whatsoever that I can see.
But they've had a couple bright spots, but one bright spot.
He's shooting 31% true shooting,
yeah,
by the way.
One, and his defense is not strong. But one other bright spot for them has been Porzingis. I think he's been better than I expected early, and you watched a fair amount of the game today, right?
Yes. That was like my secondary game, so I didn't see that much of it. But
anyway, what you've seen of Porzingis so far, what have you noticed?
I've noticed that he has not really been getting beasted at all from a strength standpoint, which has been great. And maybe playing power forward most of the time probably helps him with that. I have been really impressed with his offensive rebounding. I'm impressed by the fact that he has a 25% usage rate. You know, one thing that I noted last year about halfway through the year when I was doing a rookie report is that basically no rookies had a usage rate above 20%, above average, because they're just not ready, they're not featured, and he's someone who just the ball finds him, he can get his shot off most of the time with the jump shot. He's not shooting an amazing percentage yet, but he's getting to the foul line, and his offensive rebounding has been excellent as well. You know, he's pretty good at kind of flying in from the perimeter when they don't box him out, and then he can get his hands on a lot of balls with his long arms.
And
he's had some pretty nasty tip dunks as a result of that as well.
He has, and so he's first among rookies in offensive rebound rate and total rebound rate, but more impressively to me, he's sixth in the entire league right now among qualified players.
Yeah, in rebound rate or
offensive rebound rate?
Yeah. Yeah, his defensive rebounding was something that I had concerns about coming in. I thought he was a good offensive rebounder in Europe. I thought that would continue. But playing him with Lopez, that's less of a concern. And I think he also is benefiting from the fact that Lopez is such a good box-out guy that the guys next to Lopez always seem to do really well in the rebounding, so that's probably helping him also.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So the Pelicans are still terrible.
Yes, they are.
Just like they were this time last week. I don't know, what's going on here? Like, what do they have to do to snap out of it? I mean, at least AD is starting to play a little bit better now. But, you know, the defense has just been a train wreck.
The defense has been a train wreck, and also I think they're really missing Tyreke Evans. I think that it was something that went, I think, a little bit underappreciated last year, is the amount that he can create for himself and others, and they have a lot of guys that don't have that as a strength. I mean, Drew Holiday is a talented player. I've liked him for a long time, but that isn't, you know, that's not his identity moving forward. You know, he's a good point guard, but that isn't what he does best. And Davis is a secondary player. I mean, he's probably one of the best secondary players in the league, but I believe Kevin Pelton wrote a nice piece involving that. And so it's hard when you're relying on somebody who's who gets his looks off of other people when there are less impetus for defenses to shift and defenses to create seams and things like that. And so I think that's a big problem for them. And also when he plays power forward, I mean, I just think it's easier to defend the Pelicans because of where he has the ball and where they succeed.
Yeah, I still think there's really, other than the fact that you've had a lot of guys kind of in and out of the lineup, I mean, most of the guys that they have now, though, other than Ish Smith, the guys that are playing are guys who are there since the start of training camp.
Ish Smith.
Yeah, Ish Smith, by the way, in the top five in the league in assists, which is pretty hilarious. But, you know, and I don't think, I mean, Luke Babbitt is not a great defensive player, but there's not really anyone else to where you look at this personnel and you're like, yeah, they should be like the last in the league in offense. You know, granted, they played the Warriors. That's pretty tough, but they haven't exactly been locking down everyone else either. And they played the Warriors twice in those first three games. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, but they better get on it quick. They're 0-6 now, is that right?
I think it's 0-7.
Oof.
It's just hard to come back from when you're down that far.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's running away and hiding from them either. You know, Sacramento, who is supposed to be their competition, is doing nearly as badly. Utah is looking really good, but Memphis, you know, they could be looking like they could even be like a 500 team. I expect them to snap out of it a little bit here, and we'll get to them. But, you know, Phoenix, are they about to lose to Oklahoma City? I haven't checked that score in a second.
So they are 0-6, and their next game is Tuesday against the Mavericks.
Yeah, so that's, and the Mavericks are doing pretty well. Yeah, I guess the Mavericks would be another team that's kind of their competition, but I don't see them running away and hiding like well over 500. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to play now at, you know, what, 54 win pace or something like that just to get to that 47 wins that we thought about them getting to. And it's going to get to the point where they have to start playing at a 50 win pace to even get to 500 if this continues much longer.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got next?
Minnesota Timberwolves.
I feel like if this team was a little bit saner in its playing time distribution, that they could actually challenge for the playoffs this year.
I agree. I loved, there are so many players on this team that I like, and there are so many things that they are doing right now that drive me absolutely insane.
Did you watch that Bulls-Wolves game yesterday?
I watched almost all of it, actually.
How were they just completely locking down the Bulls? The Bulls had like 4 points in like the last 12 minutes of the game, including the overtime.
Towns was doing a really nice job contesting different things. He had a couple of blocks, and they weren't getting a ton of seams, and the Bulls were settling for some deeper shots, which is always a problem. And I mean, Jimmy Butler's had some strong stretches during this year, but I think a lot of it goes down. And for most of that stretch, they were playing Bielitsa at the four, so it's not like they were this defensive juggernaut in terms of talent. And Wiggins.
Yeah, well, Rubio is pretty awesome. I mean, and he's always locked down Derrick Rose. Even back when Derrick Rose was good, he did a nice job on him.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think like this team and KG, although I think he has like 8 points in the whole season or something. So like that's something that could ultimately start to be a problem. But you know, he's still a good defensive player. He and Towns. No, it's not like Minnesota has played some murderer's row of offenses so far either. Like, let's keep that in mind. But yeah, I mean, if they didn't play Prince, if they didn't play Zach LaVine.
Thank you.
at backup point guard, you know, if they did a few other things to really increase the spacing a little bit, you know, more of that Bielitsa at the four and Towns at the five lineup with Rubio. I mean, you wanted to say Rubio, Wiggins, Bielitsa, Towns, and anyone but Prince is sort of like the lineup that you want for them. Huh?
Yeah, and LaVine did a nice job when he was playing the two. They had this stretch where he was just disastrous at the one. Then they brought Rubio. I believe it was at the beginning of the third, or not the beginning of the third quarter, maybe it was the beginning of the fourth quarter. Then LaVine was just disastrous at point guard. Then they brought in Rubio, and all of a sudden he's playing. And a huge point of that was really articulated in my brain in the Bulls game is that playing him at point guard, especially without other real ball handlers on the floor, though Bielitsa can do some, but he's mostly playing with the starters, at least in that game, is that he has to stay back after a defensive rebound to get the ball. And when you're as fast and as bouncy as he is, you should be the second pass on a fast break. You should be the guy who's finishing, not the guy who's waiting for the ball, getting it, and making the pass. That is almost the worst thing to ask him to do.
Yeah, and he also, it's not like he has like a ton of great options around him on that second unit when he's playing point guard to where, oh yeah, he's really going to be operating and like learning the position now either. All right, so the Bucks, all is okay now in Brewtown, it looks like. John Henson is back. That has really, really helped the defense. They've looked now like much closer to what they were defensively last year now that they've got him back. Jabari actually has helped a little bit defensively. I mean, he's no great shakes, but he at least can switch more stuff on the perimeter and just avoid allowing penetration on a pick and roll. You know, someone like O'Brien wasn't necessarily going to do that. He's now been kind of relegated to the back end of the rotation. Jabari played 24 minutes on a back-to-back the other night too. So, and he looks like he's okay. He's had a couple of nice dunks so far. Doesn't look to have added 3-point range. We haven't seen that from him yet, but he looks about as good as you could hope for a guy in his first three games coming off an ACL and playing three games in four nights. So that's encouraging. I don't know. What have you got any notes on this team at all?
Well, one thing I want to note that they have looked a lot better is that we should put it in a little bit of context in terms of their opposition. They beat so they went 4-0 since last Sunday, and they beat the Nets twice, the Knicks once, and the Sixers once. So we've talked about not exactly a murderer's row. That is basically the opposite of a murderer's row, but they've looked good. So, I mean, I think you can take something from that. It's not to discount what they've done necessarily, but getting their competent rotation, I think, has been the biggest thing. And I'm still worried about Michael Carter-Williams, but I'll be worried about that forever.
Yeah, he missed, I think, the last couple of games. Yeah. And it did. Tyler Ennis was starting, didn't do a ton. He's just making his way back from that major shoulder injury over the offseason. Another little tiny note here that I've noticed from watching the film on them is, I'm not sure whether this is coaching to do this, but what they've been doing to kind of maximize the spacing is they'll have guys drive to the basket, and usually you'll have your center kind of in the dunker role, like on the baseline, but sometimes the pass can be tough to get to the guy in that position. Now what they've been doing at times is they'll have a big man kind of stationed on the elbow, and they'll, when they can get a guy with a step to the rim, they can force help and then kind of drop it off to a guy like Henson or Monroe at the elbow with a little bit of a running start, and with the big having had to go help out on the ball handler, so someone like that will have a chance to get a running start to the basket and score. It's really been nice, a great way to maximize the spacing for a team that doesn't have a lot of it, especially at the center position with Monroe and with Henson.
Yeah, that's a great point. And anything else in them? You want to move on to Miami?
No, let's go to Miami. They've been playing well. The second unit has been fantastic with Winslow and Tyler Johnson, who's been playing well at both guard spots, hitting his threes. A lot of energy defensively. Winslow already is an above-average defensive player, both in terms of his intelligence, getting over screens, really quick hands. Just his floor game is outstanding. You asked the question, though, is he a better fit with the starters than Deng?
Yeah. What do you think?
No. Because he hasn't proven that he can hit a shot yet.
That's true.
I mean, I think he might be a better defensive player than Deng, although Deng still kind of has the intelligence. They've also been playing Deng at the four a lot. They kind of have these backup big men. McRoberts isn't really playing. He's only playing like 5 minutes a game or 5 minutes in each half or so. I thought he would be a bigger part of what they're doing, but they've been playing Deng at the four kind of to close out the first and third quarters. And I think that's a really nice lineup for them. They bring Winslow in, and they might bring in Johnson as well, and so they can move Deng to the four because they have those other guys, even with Gerald Green being out. And so Deng, his shooting is a lot better at the four than it is at the three, and he also looks to have sped up his release a little bit. The only problem I see with them so far is that I think Wade has had a little bit too big of a role, and he's kind of been emboldened in that by the fact that he's had some nice games early.
Yeah, that's a great point. And something that I noticed today, I thought they defended really well in the second half. Just watching it anecdotally, just watching them, I thought they were doing a good job contesting. And then when I looked and the Raptors didn't score 20 in either quarter, that's always a good sign. But what was notable to me about today's game is functionally they only played 9 guys. And that is – that. I personally think that's surprising this early in the season, but they won by 20 against the Raptors.
It's good that they didn't play any non-functional guys, though. That's always helpful. Wade has a 32% usage rate, and Goran Dragic is slightly under 20%. That I don't think is good. And part of that is by necessity when those guys are playing together, because Wade is not a spot-up shooter. And so if Dragic is running a pick-and-roll, you've got Whiteside. Dang is only an okay shooter. You just don't have the spacing. They're going to leave Wade quite a bit. You know, there's one notable play where they ran a side pick-and-roll. Dragic got ice, went to the baseline, threw it back to the elbow to Bosch, and that's almost invariably that's going to be wide open for a good long two for Bosch. That's a shot that he makes. But Wade was on the opposite wing, and his man, DeRozan, was all the way in Bosch's lap on the opposite elbow, and then they threw it to Wade, and he just, you know, wasn't able to take the shot. DeRozan just got back there. So it's a concern, and I see, and when Wade has the ball in his hands, Dragic is someone that is a good enough three-point shooter you have to guard out there. So I see that, but they also, I think, need to be staggering those two guys more and giving Dragic a chance to kind of run things with the second unit. And I think that would be a pretty good fit if you play him with Tyler Johnson and Winslow to really get out and be a little bit more up-tempo. Maybe with Whiteside out of the game, you could bring Bosch back in as well. And that could be a really nice second unit. I do like the way that Spoelstra has been staggering, having at least a couple of his stars in, and his units always have somewhere to go for offense, which is nice. A lot of teams can't say that with their second unit.
Yeah, then they have looked good, which makes me think that they'll resolve this. And Whiteside today had he shot a pull up from like 20 feet. It was insane.
Oh yeah, he's actually an okay mid range shooter.
Yeah, but as a pull up shot, that was different for me.
The other thing with Wade, and we saw this 2 years ago in that 2014 Eastern Conference Finals when LeBron fouled out. He cannot score at all against good defense anymore. And he just got completely locked down by Paul George. He was 4-15 in that game on Friday, was shooting just some terrible fadeaways. And when he is guarded by Paul George, I think you just need to go somewhere else, frankly, because he's just not going to be able to score. And he's not really going to be able to make a play for others either. Although his alley-oop chemistry with Whiteside is great. Like his quote that Ethan Skolnick was talking about today is, he gets into the lane, and then when he exhausts his possibilities, I guess that's what Wade said, he can then just throw the alley-oop up to Whiteside, and more times than not, Whiteside's just going to come down with it on somebody's head. So that's been really awesome. But still, I mean, 32% usage from Wade, he's just not that good anymore. Like, that shouldn't be the case any longer.
Yeah. Is it time to panic for Memphis?
Well, we said no on Thursday. And then they lost by 10 at the Jazz in a game that maybe wasn't necessarily even that close. Just no chance of scoring we've seen against good defenses. They put up 69 against the Warriors, 79 against the Jazz, probably the two best defenses in the league right now. And, I mean, to me, one thing that was noted by some of the Memphians, is that how you say it, Memphian?
No idea. Memphisans?
No, I think it is Memphians. That was noted by them is they're actually still have been okay with Gasol and Randolph on the court together, even though those guys have not been that great in the stats. But then when one of them goes off the floor, or they're running with pretty much just the straight bench unit with Wright at center, and I don't know that it's necessarily his fault, because they've been spending a lot of time with Jeff Green at the four and Wright at the five. Those lineups have been getting smashed. So that's a concern, and maybe they'll need to kind of extend those guys a little more, but they're kind of older. And then Conley, we talked about on Thursday, he's been efficient, but he probably hasn't been doing enough offensively when they've been struggling. So and then Tony Allen has not quite been the defensive stopper that I remember being in past years. Like, Klay Thompson was actually able to do something against him on in that huge 50-point blowout game, which you don't recall seeing. He was able even to drive past him one-on-one. So obviously, if Allen isn't just completely erasing guys, it becomes a lot more untenable to play him.
Do you want to hear their schedule the next 2 weeks?
Desperately.
Clippers, Warriors, Blazers, Wolves, Thunder, Rockets, Spurs.
That's bad.
That's real bad.
And they're what are they, 3-4 right now?
They're 3-4 right now.
Yeah, Jeremiah Engelman tweeted that he guarantees that they will have a better record than their point differential would indicate. I guess when you get blown out by like 100 points total over the first like six games, but you're actually 3-3 still. Like, that's, you can probably guarantee that. So, and they are a team that has reliably outperformed their point differential in previous years. Maybe you can argue that there is something there to that, that they, there's something inherent about this team. But yeah, I mean, they're just, they're, as we said on Thursday, they're just not doing the things that Memphis does from a defense standpoint, from a rebounding stand up standpoint, from a post up standpoint. And so, you know, it's, I think they're going to continue to struggle until those guys start playing better.
You ready to talk about a team that is doing what we expected defensively?
Yeah, how'd they do against the Knicks today? I guess they beat Brooklyn, one of the worst offenses in the league, which we will get to at the end. I'm sure everyone's happy that we're saving Brooklyn for near the end of the program as a tease to stay on board listening. But yeah, I mean, we know what they are defensively. We've talked about that on past programs. Scott has made some adjustments, so he's changed up the second unit to get more D. Huertas is out of the rotation now. Bass barely played. Ryan Kelly is out of the rotation. They're going with Tarik Black at center, who's probably a better defensive option than either of those two bigs that we mentioned. Meta World Peace is actually getting some time, and, you know, I mean, he's going to be a huge offensive liability, but as long as he's not playing against guys who are incredibly fast, he's still got the guile and the strength to kind of match up a little bit against guys like Carmelo or some of the other, Paul George maybe, if they, when they play them or something like that. Like, he's at least can defend a little bit. So I think he's going for more defense now on that second unit, and they at least have not been completely hemorrhaging over the last two games. Of course, they played the Knicks and Nets too.
Watching this team just depresses me, honestly. Like, and some of that is Kobe related, because Kobe early, and I hope it changes early on, he's looked done, just straight up done. But I mean,
it's remarkable. Like, last year, I thought he showed enough talent. I mean, he had games where he at least would go on these awesome runs, and you felt like, yeah, he was overall, he was just comically bad and just was not judicious enough in his shot selection and had a comically high usage rate. But you felt like he could at least do some things to where if he dialed it back a little bit, and he's, you know, he's always had a nice passing vision, where he could at least draw some attention and make, you know, abuse kind of smaller defenders in the post and still be an effective NBA player if he were playing a little bit more of a role. This year, I don't even think that's the case. I think now he just looks like there's absolutely nothing that he can do from a positive standpoint on the floor so far.
And I think playing him with D'Angelo Russell has hurt Russell too, because I think you want to give him the chance to show that he can run an offense, and when Kobe's on the floor, that's impossible.
Well, and the other thing too is that Kobe, like, he never moves without the ball.
Yep.
And he, you know, he's not going to get like a backdoor. I mean, he looks just like so slow too. His handle is terrible now. He used to have a great handle. Now he just, you know, it takes him, like, the ball sticks in his hands for like 5 minutes on every dribble. He has no change of direction. It's just, and he's dribbling a lot less this year than he did last year as well, which is, you know, you might say is good, but he's also taking like more than half of his shots from three at the moment. So yeah, like, this was like one of his good games, and he was like 4 out of 15 or something like that tonight. So yeah, it's looking really bad, and he's not making up for his defense with it. Of course. I mean, what do you make of the whole D'Angelo Russell not closing games thing?
Well, I believe he closed the game tonight, but it's terrifying. I mean, everything about Byron Scott scares me.
Did he? All right. I don't think he did, actually.
You could be right. I thought I saw him out there, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I wasn't paying. I was only had half an eye on that game. But,
yeah, because the other game was Cavs-Pacers, which was much more interesting and less depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The Clippers, I've had trouble figuring out their season. I mean, obviously their starters have looked good, but they still, it's early, and you can say, you know, they haven't played many teams, but they still haven't beaten anybody.
Yeah, they struggled at home against the Suns. That was like kind of a close game. They struggled at home against the Kings. That was a close game, even though they didn't have Cousins for the second half. They almost lost to the Kings on the road too, although that's not a bad loss when they have Cousins, I don't think. The Mavs, they blew out, but the Mavs didn't bring their whole team that game. They looked good against the Warriors, obviously, and then Paul was out for that loss against the Rockets. I don't know. I think they've been about what I would have expected so far. One ridiculous statistic for this team, though, they're shooting 77% in the restricted area right now, which I guess will happen when you have Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to stay at 77, but I wouldn't be surprised if they end the season with the best restricted area shooting percentage in the league.
Yeah, and for reference, 60% is the league average on shots in the restricted area, typically. I don't really have much else on the Clippers. We talked about them extensively on Thursday's program, if you want to hear more about them, our thoughts on them. But, and at least Paul Pierce closed the game against the Rockets the other
day. Yeah, that was encouraging.
But they got lit by Harden. They just had nobody who could stay in front of him. And, Austin Rivers, J.J. Redick. Redick did a nice job on him in the playoffs last year at times, but he's still, I wouldn't still be wanting to count on him as guarding your big wing threats on the other team either. So that's, I think, going to always be a continued bugaboo for them. The Pacers, Paul George is back. He's looking like a top 10 player in the league so far.
He looks great today. And I think that what's been so encouraging for me is that his jumper, at least today, but from what I've seen of him, his jumper looks closer than I expected it to be at this point.
Yeah. His mid-range has been good. He's been hitting threes. Rebounding incredibly well. I think he's been in double-digit rebounds on average, or like 9 rebounds a game, pretty close to that. And now, granted, they went back to what the pattern has been for them so far has been when they play a team with two bigs that you worry about, like Cleveland, they had Love, Memphis, they matched up big against Memphis in the starting lineup. And when they haven't been, that's when they've been going small. But today may not have been a great litmus test because C.J. Miles was out and Rodney Sucker are both out with ankle injuries. So maybe they just did that because they felt like, these are the only guys we have. We just don't have enough wings. But my guess would be, given what the pattern has been, that's kind of what they're going to do is just change the starting lineup. And, I kind of think more teams, I like them going small, and I would have liked to have seen what happened if they did with C.J. Miles, if he were available. I think more teams should change up their starting lineup based on what the matchups are.
Absolutely. And I also think teams should.
I mean, unless you have like some big star who's kicking butt, but LaVoy Allen or Jordan Hill or CJ Miles, these aren't guys who like, all right, we have to have this guy out there. He's so good. So why not match up?
And the other note that I would have is that you want to try to counteract a team's strength. So like I've always liked the idea of Myers Leonard playing center against a good shot blocker, a good rim protector, because they have to respect his shot. And so you can do that as a starter or you can do that as a backup, but just maximizing your competitive advantages wherever they are.
Yeah. What do you think? Are you willing to revise your anti-Pacers playoff prediction or not yet?
Not yet.
I guess they're only 3-4, but they've had a couple of nice wins. But
I've been encouraged by it, but I think, the Pistons are 4-1. And when you look at the teams that are kind of above them, I like most of those teams better. That isn't to say that all of them will be above it, but I think that if they're in the 9 spot in terms of talent and wins conceptually, that puts them in a good place because somebody will fall out. Somebody's going to get an injury that's going to decimate their season. So if you can stick there, that's fine.
Yeah, Miles Turner also continues to look pretty good. Like, his turnaround jump shot is really looking like a huge weapon. Now, he is kind of catching guys with it unawares, and Tristan Thompson kind of started to body him up more in the post, and he wasn't able really to deal with that on a couple of possessions in the second half of this game. And Tristan Thompson also is actually an excellent post defender, something that he doesn't get enough credit for. But so it'd be interesting to see kind of how Turner adjusts when teams start adjusting to him taking that shot, because most of his post scoring has been he catches it 15 feet away and then he just turns and shoots over the guy, which he can do against a lot of especially second unit post up guys. But we'll see if he can continue shooting that kind of a percentage on those mid-range turnaround jumpers.
The Rockets, Harden, he's had some high scoring games recently, though I would note that they were against two teams that really can't defend him in the Kings and the Clippers, but he's looked more like himself.
Yeah, probably the biggest thing to note for them is he is just handling the ball much more than Ty Lawson is. He basically has been the point guard still for them, and perhaps rightfully so. He's a better player than Lawson. He needed to get back into his rhythm. He was obviously in a funk kind of to start the year, but now he's had those back-to-back 40-point games at 43 and 46 the last two nights, and was starting to get to the line and look like his usual self. He was on just a really unlucky stretch from three-point range at the start of the year, and so that seems to be fixed. I mean, are you, now that they've kind of righted the ship here to get back to 3-3, do you feel better about them? Is there kind of more work that needs to be done there? Like, what are you thinking about them at this point?
I feel pretty comfortable with them. I mean, they're not beating demolishing teams, but they also, they've been missing guys due to injuries. I mean, they started Marcus Thornton against the Kings. Did they start him against Clippers too?
Yeah, and they started him in Miami.
That's right.
Last weekend as well. So
yeah, I mean, if you're doing that and you're still beating teams,
I don't think they did start him against the Clippers because
yeah, I don't think they did either. They had guys, but I mean, in the Kings game, the Demo and
oh no, maybe they did. Yeah, because Jones is still
yeah,
out.
Yeah, exactly. So
Jones and Beverly are supposed to be back now in the next week or
yeah, so.
But and we still have not heard anything about Monty Unis, by the
right.
way.
And we also haven't to note back. I don't think we've heard anything about Joe Green either. So go back a little bit.
Oh yeah, well he is out of the hospital.
Oh good, good, good. I hadn't heard that.
But we still have no idea what the heck happened to him, and the Heat have not actually released anything. And maybe there's probably due to some privacy issues when it's an off court situation like that. So the Warriors, not a ton more to say on them other than just like a slight sphincter tightening in the fourth quarter. They basically were ahead comfortably the entire game against the Kings because their defense is still that good. I mean, they were still totally sleepwalked through that game. I think it was a little interesting because they usually, when they play in Sacramento, they'll go up there and stay that night. I think they were given the option of just kind of driving up instead. And I know Steph actually had like a ton of family in town as well to see him and Seth Curry match up, which didn't happen because Seth had a sprained ankle. But so that might have been a little bit of a distraction for him as well. I guess that's really more speculation than anything, and probably irresponsible speculation, but we try not to do that on this program. Sometimes it happens. But yeah, so they gave like a D-plus effort, and they still kind of won comfortably on the road. So I still think, what is their next tough game? I mean, they play at home against the Pistons. That'll actually be interesting. I'll be interested to see how that Pistons defense holds up, which has been excellent so far against the Warriors on Monday.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. It actually ties us into the Pistons who are the next team because I don't think we have anything more to say on the Warriors and they.
Yeah, we talk about them so
exactly.
much.
Exactly, I don't think we need to talk about them too much. You can listen to basically any other podcast after a game of theirs, and the Pistons, if they can defend at anything close to this level, they're really good. But I think they're 92.9 per 100. I mean, I think that's unrealistic. But you know, if they can stay in the top five of defense, then they're a competitive team.
And it's absolutely remarkable that Stan Van Gundy is getting that out of this team.
Yes.
Right? I mean, DeAndre Drummond has – or geez, DeAndre Drummond.
And that's actually a fair Freudian slip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is Andre Drummond. That's actually not as bad as some can be. Andre Drummond is – obviously has always had all the physical tools, but has never really been that effective of a defender. Maybe down the end of last year he started getting to that point. But you've got him, Ersan Ilyasova, Marcus Morris, Stanley Johnson is a rookie. Reggie Jackson has never really been some great shakes. KCP is still pretty young, although he's got some good tools too. Not a team that you look at and say, oh yeah, this is going to be an amazing defensive team, or at least not guys who had a history of being on good defensive teams since this team has been in the bottom 15 in defense for the last like 6 years or whatever it is. So Van Gundy is just doing a great job, and he's getting just enough offense out of these guys with Drummond just assaulting the offensive glass. He's averaging 19 rebounds a game, although part of that is because he's played an overtime game. But still, I mean, that's just been absolutely remarkable. And he's getting – Marcus Morris actually has been good. Markieff has been terrible, which is surprising. You wouldn't have thought that Marcus would be playing well and Markieff would be bad so far this year. But, I've been enjoying watching this Pistons team. I can't wait to see him in person on Monday.
I'm a little bit concerned that if they have those rough games without having Jody Meeks for the next while, you know, couple months, that it'll be harder for them to even to keep their offense above board, kind of similar situation to what the Jazz have gone through. But they've done well, and I feel like I've been really impressed with Reggie Jackson as well. Like, you know, there was that small sample size issue, but, you know, I think it's been enough, and enough is kind of impressive with what they have.
So the Denver Nuggets played at Golden State on Friday. They got completely blown out in the first half. It was 74-44 at halftime. And then they actually battled back and got it under 10 briefly. They forced the Golden State starters to play the entire game, which Mike Malone was happy about post game. But Emmanuel Mudiay, who I think going into that game was 9 out of 38 on twos. And so I asked Mike Malone before the game what he could do to start shooting twos better, and he said, I think he's actually a good shooter when he has his feet set. He's been shooting well on threes. The problem has just been his shot selection has not been good. He's been shooting a lot of fadeaways, not going straight up and down, you know, 15-footers, 20-footers, that where he's off the dribble, fading away. And so if he could just improve his shot selection, that he thinks it's not going to be an issue at all. I would add that Mudiay has not been that great finishing at the rim, which I think that's going to be the case for most point guards who are taking the leap to this level, even the guys who are really athletic. It takes you an adjustment period to know what you can get away with and how to use your body against NBA big men, because you're just being challenged athletically at the rim in a way that you're just not prepared for. You just have to try it out, and it takes some trial and error to be like, all right, this is what I can do. This is what I can get away with. My shot, I'm going to get this shot off. I can feel comfortable with it. I don't have to rush this. All those sorts of things go through your head, and you just need reps as a young guard, no matter how athletic you are, to get used to what it's like trying to score on guys at the rim, what the refs are going to call to. I mean, verticality is not something that a lot of young guys have dealt with. They're used to just getting a foul call anytime there's contact whatsoever. So finishing at the rim is something that's hard to learn, but I think with his physical tools, he can get there ultimately.
And it's also something that's very difficult to replicate in summer league and hard to replicate in practice when your best rim protector is out, which Nurkic is.
Yeah, they also, they don't really have anyone who's much of a shot blocker on that team. You make a good point there. If he's going up against LaVerne and Jokic.
And Kenneth Faried.
In practice. Yeah, Faried can jump a little bit, but he's not like a verticality guy at the rim. He's more of a like sneak up on you from behind shot blocker. I don't know. I think that Mudiay has looked real good passing the ball. His three-point shooting has been good. I like the way he's competed defensively for the most part, although it was a layup line in that first half on Friday, but that wasn't necessarily his fault. I think for a rookie point guard, he's been pretty good. So I'm encouraged with what we've seen from him so far, to be sure.
Yeah, obviously the Pelicans, we expected to get better with time, but I think they've looked better than the Lakers and the Kings by a decent margin. Do you agree?
The Lakers, certainly they beat the Lakers at home. And also Denver is just decimated right now as well. Just not having Nurkic. Wilson Chandler, they desperately, desperately miss. They tried to go small against the Warriors the way they did in the preseason, starting Faried at center and Gallo at power forward, but then not having that other guy who can kind of switch on the perimeter and at least hit a shot on occasion in Chandler. They don't really have anyone else who's an established wing outside of Gallo. Gallo, by the way, is an awesome isolation offensive player. Like when he gets a big on him and he shoots a jump shot, like it seems like it goes down every time.
Yeah, I still am super intrigued by him playing the four long-term with this team.
Yeah, and you hope that Nurkic can provide enough beef and enough protecting the rim to counterbalance the fact that you're not getting a ton of that from the four position if you're playing Gallo there. The Mavericks, it appears that speculation on Dirk Nowitzki's demise, which was quite rampant on this program, has thus far been wildly incorrect. He's been awesome so far this year.
He has been fantastic. Is he still at 50% on threes?
Yes, he's at exactly 50% on threes, shooting basically 50% from mid-range. And, so maybe that proves, we speculated that this might be the year that you didn't feel like you had to stick to him in the pick and pop so hard, but they have to. And Deron Williams has been a beneficiary. You remember that his shooting at the rim regressed like under 50% last year, which was always going to get better. But this year, granted, he's missed a couple of games. This isn't that many. It's probably only like 10 shots or something. But he's shooting 75% within 3 feet. And a lot of that is just because he can get ahead of steam going around Dirk. And then he's got basically a 2-on-1 at the rim a lot of times with the center. And, a lot of these small guards, whether it was Harris, Monte Ellis, J.J. Barea, we see all these guys are totally effective. And then as soon as they leave Dirk, because where you can basically get a free run off a pick and pop going to the rim because the big man is clinging to Dirk, they regress again. So that's always something to watch is that Dirk effect, and it seems to be continuing so far this year. And because it has, I think Dallas has been pretty effective.
What have you thought about Wesley Matthews so far?
He's looked okay, but he is taking 60% of his shots from three. I think that's a little bit more. We haven't really seen him do much offensively other than just shoot spot-up threes so far. And he hasn't been hitting it that great. He only has like a 9 PER. Granted, you know, very early, you're expecting him to get better throughout the year. They still desperately need him as just a guy that you at least have to guard at the three-point line on offense and who can play decent defense on the wing because they're so thin on the wing. He's definitely a useful player to them, even in his current iteration, but still saying that he is absolutely back already, that's going too far. But I haven't seen anything so far in his performance to foreclose against that happening, at least.
I think we can move on to Cavs, and my question for you with that is, so far this year, have they been the second-best team in the league?
It's a good question. I probably would go with San Antonio still.
That's fair.
If they played each other on a neutral court in the next game, I would say that San Antonio would be favored. But their defense has been excellent, and I promised on the last podcast that I was going to try to watch their next game and look at it. And part of the reason is that Kevin Love has actually been totally good. He had a couple of times where he was switched off in isolation or sort of as the big man on a pick and roll where he just like shut the guy down. It was actually pretty good. I mean, he's not a lockdown guy, but you just have not seen any of those instances this year that you saw so often the first half of last year or in his Minnesota days when he even wasn't that bad necessarily statistically in some of his better Minnesota years, but where he just wasn't getting over, wasn't jumping. He had some nice verticality plays in this game against the Pacers, and the Pacers just, between him, Thompson, and Mozgov, the Cavs were able to just lock down the basket area. I didn't look at the final numbers, but at one point, the Pacers had shot 7 of 14 within the restricted area, and they had taken 30 mid-range shots at that same point. So you could tell that just they were shutting down the three-point line, and they were shutting down the basket and just forcing the Pacers to take mid-rangers, and Love was a big part of that. He's been much, much better than he's been in the past.
They also are doing a substantially better job of integrating him in the offense and realizing that he is a very talented player on that end. And one of the things that I noticed in this game in particular is that they're looking for him more as the trail guy. And he is wonderful in that role because teams don't always think about it. Even with their limited roster, the Cavs have lots of penetrators. And so if you can initiate an offense, try to get something, and Love is just coming to the three-point line, teams are just, by their very instinct, are going to leave that alone, and he can hit those shots.
Did you see that report from the Akron Beacon Journal that LeBron was unhappy with the shape that Love came into camp in last year?
I did see it, and I mean, from what I remember...
What did you make of that?
From what I remember, he wasn't in the best shape at the beginning of last year, and I can understand...
I remember the opposite. I thought he had lost like a ton of weight and was like super skinny at the start. Now he struggled, he had sort of like a back issue that I think he was struggling with. So it may have been injuries or maybe body composition and cardio shape are not the same thing.
Yeah.
And he definitely wasn't defending very well at the start of last year. The whole Cavs team wasn't. So maybe that's understandable. But I thought just from a body composition standpoint, he was about as thin as he ever was coming into the Cavs camp last year. So I don't know. I mean, I didn't do a conditioning test with him. It's hard to tell, but I don't remember that being an issue, at least from just the way he looked.
I'm trying to remember how he moved early last year, and I honestly don't remember it strongly enough to. I have trouble remembering how the Cavs were before they got Mozgov last year.
Well, they were like 18-19 or something.
I remember they were like disappointing, that, right? Like, but I don't remember.
They couldn't stop anybody. Love is also getting back on the offensive glass this year as well. I think he's just is feeling healthier. That back issue may have limited him more than we realized last year. Although it is ironic that he seems to be playing better and in better shape now, coming off, basically a 6-month shoulder rehab than he was last year when, he was pretty much ready to go.
Move on to the Chicago Bulls. They have, I watched a fair amount of their game against Minnesota, and I feel like that game against the Hornets was this week, right?
Yes.
That was horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, but so we talked about what the Wolves did against them defensively, but offensively, like, what, I didn't watch that game. Like, what was wrong with their ability to score down the end of the game? I mean, were they getting good shots and just missing them? Was it like stagnant, you know, ISO ball? Like, what was the problem?
They were not getting good shots, and the Wolves were doing a nice job of making them score in the half court almost every single possession, which is incredibly important. And Towns was great at just making them even think about every shot in the rim, every shot in their restricted area, but in the paint too. And Wiggins did a very nice job defensively in that game. Not, you know, not like you're seeing the Tony Allen or anything like that, but I thought he did a nice job making Butler and whoever else he was on take hard shots. And that's really, when you're a young team like this, if you can do that, I think that's a huge success.
Yeah, I will say also this is Minnesota related, but I thought Wiggins, at least from, you know, I watched all of his offensive possessions in that game afterwards, and he at least showed more of a facility in the pick and roll and with some hesitation, some nice in and outs in the pick and roll getting to the rim than I had seen from him previously. And supposedly he, I think, was struggling with a back issue as well to start the year, and maybe he's now snapping out of that a little bit. He also shot better on threes in that game. But so that was probably the most encouraging offensive game I've seen from him as far as his ability to penetrate off the dribble, make moves, and finish, as opposed to just kind of relying on post-ups or spot-ups or, you know, getting to the offensive glass. Just from his ability to really be a creator off the dribble, I thought it was very encouraging for him. The Bulls, worse than the league shooting in the restricted area, goes back to a huge problem they had in last year's playoffs as well. Rose can't make a layup anymore. He can't really explode over people the way he used to. Gasol is not fantastic at that. Noah, obviously, we know what his limitations are, finishing around the basket. Mirotic, not an explosive guy either. Butler can be pretty good, but he'll take some hard ones, and a lot of times, you know, he's getting fouled instead of actually finishing it. So that's pretty disheartening, and you would hope that having more spacing on the floor would help those guys finish and have more room, but again, that just has not been the case so far.
How many more years are we going to have to wait for a Chicago coach to figure out their front court combinations?
Yeah, they've actually have now, because they had a little success with Gasol and Noah in that Oklahoma City game, we saw some more of that, I think, the other night. One thing, and also two other notes, Mirotic had been awesome the first three games, and then these last three games has been horrible, just has not been able to hit a three-pointer. And then Doug McDermott, everyone's like, oh, he didn't play at all last year, he didn't have any blocks or steals, the statistical translations don't like him. No, he's an NBA player. He's good. He's a good offensive player.
I think he'll be, if anybody can create on their second unit, I think he'd be a really nice fit there in, let's say, like February or March.
Yeah, and you'd like to see that happen a little bit more. I mean, he's 16 out of 29 on threes right now, 73% true shooting. And even, you know, the guy he's always compared to, Korver, I don't think McDermott will ever be quite the shooter that Korver is, because Korver has a very versatile jump shot, and I've used that term in the early days of the podcast, but that basically means that you can get your jump shot off quickly when you're not, don't perfectly have your feet set. You can just take your shot in more situations. McDermott doesn't quite have that type of a shot yet. Maybe he will someday. But McDermott is also much better going to the basket with little floaters, layups, back doors even. You know, he's real good at going back door. Excellent passer as well. He's a really good offensive player. And defensively, he's still going to get blown by all the time, but he at least is showing more intelligence executing the scheme. Like, he had some nice plays where he was just leaving Roberson when he was guarding him in that Oklahoma City game and kind of gumming up the works. So I think McDermott is going to be pretty good. Tony Snell has not been so good so far. But I think if Dunleavy can come back, and, you know, we don't know whether he's going to be the same at his age coming off of a back injury, but with Dunleavy, McDermott, Jimmy Butler, they're starting to get to be okay on the wing, and then maybe Snell being more of a fourth wing. McDermott now has been starting these last couple of games, and, you know, it seems like every game he has 10 points on 5 shots.
You ready to move on?
Indeed.
Charlotte is 10th in the league in true shooting percentage right now, and it's not in a way that you'd expect.
They're 6th in offense, which is really good, fifth in three-point attempt rate. I think they're either last or second to last year. And then they're totally avoiding turnovers. That's always something that Al Jefferson has been great at, a very underrated part of his game. And they're third in avoiding turnovers. That's fantastic. Jefferson has like a 25 PER. He's been lighting up the last couple of teams he played against. I didn't see their game against San Antonio over the weekend, but Dallas and the Bulls had no chance at stopping him whatsoever. He does look a little bit lighter on his feet so far. I don't know. I mean, how much of this offense do you think is sustainable for them so far? I mean, they're only 20th in defense so far. I don't think, you know, Clifford is a wizard, but I think just with their talent, it's hard to see them getting into the top half of the league there. But what about this offense?
I don't think it's super sustainable. I mean, Jeremy Lamb was in the top five in PER, I believe, until yesterday, and that is obviously...
Yeah, Kemba Walker has been shooting very efficiently. He's like a 58% true shooting, so that's not going to continue. He's never shot over 40% from the field in his career so far, so it's hard to imagine that. But, you know, they also never had any spacing. Yeah. It probably will help
them. And if they ever straighten out the rotation and get Spencer Hawes the heck out of there, that'll help.
Yeah, Hawes, we've talked about on previous programs, is one of my least favorite players to watch in the league, and it's not like he's some great shakes defensively. I really think that Kaminsky should be playing over him because Kaminsky is going to actually drain those shots. You know, and I'm not like an enormous Kaminsky fan by any means, but Kaminsky only played like 4 minutes or something the other night, which was pretty miserable. And yeah, I mean, I think he just does all the things that Hawes theoretically does, but he actually does them. He is a much quicker release. He's much more accurate from three than Hawes is, and I think he's more mobile as well defensively, but they just see Kaminsky as a four. He's a four. He's a four. He's just totally pigeonholed into there, and I don't know what Hawes is doing to hold on to that rotation spot.
And another benefit for me with Kaminsky over Hawes is that if a guy closes on him too hard, he's much more capable of doing something else, like a dribble and a pass or anything of that nature than Hawes is. I mean, Hawes, it feels like he's just going to take the shot or something bad's going to happen.
Oh, I guess we have to do the Nets now, huh?
Do we?
Well, I mean, I think, you know what, after them comes the Celtics, and so I'm sure Celtics fans are just going to love to hear what we have to say about the Nets anyway, since they have their pick. It's really, so I think we just owe it to Celtics fans, if not Nets fans.
And we know we need that love from Celtics fans. The Nets are terrible. Just straight up terrible.
27th, and they haven't really even played like some murderer's row schedule either. They are 27th in defense, 26th in pace, so they're not even fast, 29th in three-point attempt rate offensively, 28th in free throw rate, and 24th in turnover percentage on offense.
Yeah, I mean, would you say...
I mean, they're not doing anything well offensively. I mean, they have no one to get penetration to get to the line or open up threes. And you know, I'm sure they're driving into a crowd all the time. That's why they're turning it over. Other than Brooke Lopez, and I guess Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, there's not much of a way of bright spots on this squad.
I like Rondae. I've always liked him. I think we both did. Didn't, is that right?
Yeah, I think, especially for where he was picked, you always knew he was going to be a good energy guy. He was going to project as a lockdown defensive player. I mean, you could think of him as kind of a poor man's MKG. I mean, I think he's one of the, for the guys who are drafted in that range, he at least had one of the highest floors of anyone because you knew he had a few NBA skills. Even if his shooting was going to be rough, you know he could play 15, 20 minutes a game as kind of a energy defense guy off the bench. And he's been good. That's really the only times they've had any success at all have been when he's been on the floor.
And it's going to – well, so, okay, I think their next decent chance to win a game is they face the Kings on Friday in Sacramento. After that, they play lots of decent teams.
Second end – we're going to see them on the second end of a back-to-back in person on Saturday. And we'll get to say Tim Bontemps' last game as the Nets beat writer. We'll be looking forward to seeing him that night.
Congratulations, Tim. He's taking a job as a national writer for the Washington Post.
Indeed. So let's get on to those Celtics. One of our concerns coming into the year was that David Lee would get way too much time. Well, that didn't last very long. He's not even starting anymore. He only played 12 minutes the other night when they beat up on the Wizards.
Kudos, Brad Stevens. Kudos.
Yeah, I thought that they I mean, maybe his status wasn't as high because he got traded there, but still, I mean, he was kind of brought in to start. He still has the big salary. He's still, you know, 2010 guy in this league, you know, has like that sort of facade to him. But yeah, I mean, he is only shooting 54% around the rim. Obviously, this is a small sample, but only 20% on the shots that really kind of made him special, which is kind of his running flip shots with either hand. I mean, he was a very skilled player in that area. I mean, one of the few guys in the league who was able to actually really make a living off of those type of shots once upon a time. And so, yeah, I mean, he's out of the rotation now. He's obviously not giving you anything defensively. He's gumming up the spacing for everyone else. And so if he's not, he's bad defensively, he's not helping people by spacing the floor, and then he's not even scoring via his own individual offense either, and there's really no reason to have him out there at that point.
I will say two things on the Celtics. One, I want to take a second, I don't want to say any words, to appreciate the fact that the Warriors were able to trade him there with such a huge salary dump that helped them so much with absolutely zero compensation. And the second thing is, Jared Sullinger's alive.
Yeah, you always hear stuff about guys, especially guys who've struggled to get in shape like he has. Supposedly he was up around 300 pounds, over 300 pounds last year. He had that broken foot. Word was that it scared him straight. He'd lost all this weight. He was going to be a lot better, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you just never know whether that type of thing is going to be true or not, because you've heard it a million times with guys when it didn't turn out to be true, or maybe they did lose the weight and they still weren't necessarily any good. But yeah, he's been shooting the ball a lot better, rebounding pretty well. His mobility is up. I still don't think that he is quite as good of a player as Kelly Olynyk. I don't think that ultimately long-term, the Olynyk-Johnson combination, I think, is going to be the best one. And, you know, down the end of games, I think Sullinger is someone who can really be attacked. And so it seems like Stevens' philosophy is going to be kind of ride the hot hand at the end of games. And I think just because Sullinger is playing well throughout the course of the game doesn't mean you necessarily want to go with him at the end when teams really kind of zero in on a weakness. But who knows? He's surprised me so far. Maybe I'll be eating those words too.
Yeah, I've been encouraged, I guess, by them overall. But I'm ready to move on to a team that I've been way more encouraged than I expected, which is the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, they had that nice win against Miami. They haven't beaten anybody else other than, I guess, Washington, although Washington is not playing all
they
that well.
They beat the Hornets
either
twice
at the moment.
That's looking better now than it was.
Yeah, I mean, like, they haven't had, it's not like they've been, like, killing bad teams either, you know, but they haven't played necessarily any good teams. I still think that they're, when you look at, like, what their net rating is, it's not what you would expect. I think it's, like, in the 5-6 range, like, not what you would expect for, like, a 6-1 team necessarily, although that getting blown out by the Pistons on opening night is looking like a bit of an aberration, although the Pistons have been good. So the thing that stuck out to me is, the biggest reason I thought they would regress, I mean, I guess there were three. One was just their point differential last year wasn't that great compared to how many games they won. Two, they were going to miss Carroll a lot. And three, that they were relying on a lot of guys who are kind of a little bit towards the downside, 29, 30, 31, 34 in the case of Korver, and that those guys were going to have an incremental drop-off. And they haven't missed Carroll at all because Bazemore has been unbelievable. And none of those guys have dropped off.
One thing that surprised me, considering how much we know big guys like to play small, like play a position down, is that we've only seen 31 minutes of Al Horford with Tiago Splitter.
Yeah, Splitter not playing that many minutes. I think that they know that he's struggled with those injuries from San Antonio. You know, he's really only been playing like 15 minutes a game, I think, so far. Yeah, Splitter only 134 minutes so far on the year, only shooting 45%, which is not too amazing. You know, he's kind of struggled to finish as he often does on pick and roll. But really, though, you look at this team, they have eight guys who are all playing well right now. Tabo Sefolosha has been shooting the ball well off the bench. I mean, Justin Holiday even has been pretty solid for them, even as a ninth guy. Splitter has been a good backup, you know, much better than Pero Antic was last year. Schroeder has been good in the box score stats. And then you have the core four, the guys who were all-stars last year, and Bazemore looking like a starter as well. I do think that they could be in big trouble against certain teams that have bigger wings because Bazemore is not going to be able to match up with them. They'll maybe have to go more with Tabo there, and we'll see how well the offense runs when he's out there for big minutes. But, you know, I don't think that this team is like an Eastern Conference finalist yet or a threat to the Cavs or anything like that, but they're doing much better than I thought they would. It looks like they're well on their way to 50 wins and better than either of us thought they would be.
Yeah, friend of my podcast, Arturo Galletti, was on when we did the over-unders a couple weeks after. He was in love with their over, and something he said that really resonated with me was, this is an incredibly well-coached team, and they're going to win a lot of those games. And you talked about their weakness against big wings, but there aren't a ton of those in the East. Like, I'm very...
Yeah, Paul George.
LeBron.
LeBron, Jimmy Butler, Carmelo.
Yeah,
it's actually a lot.
Well, I mean, that's a fair amount, but it's not. But I mean, on a day to day basis, you're not sitting there going, yeah. You know, like when you face the Orlando Magic or the Pistons or a team like that, you're not sitting there going, oh God, how are we going to handle this? And I think that they're going to win a lot of games. I think that they're well coached. They're deep, which is very important. I mean, talk about how it's so pivotal in this league right now, especially when you play on back to backs, to get as close to 48 minutes of competent basketball playing, and they're a team that gets awfully close to that at every position.
Yeah, their player development is to be commended. Bazemore's jump shot just looks much better. He's been scoring with his right hand more. It really just looks like he's taken another step, and the talk was, can they find the next Damari Carroll? It's only been 6 games for Bazemore. Like, let's not go completely crazy yet, or I guess 7 games. Let's not go totally crazy yet that he's the solution. But I think that their confidence in what their system can bring out of guys and the way that they develop players looks like it's entirely well-founded thus far.
Yeah.
All right, we done?
Yeah.
You got anything to plug
it
off?
Yes, I do. So I'm going to do – there are 2 weekly columns that I'm doing that come out on Mondays. One is the League Pass Alert column I talked about last week for the Sporting News, and the other one is going to be Warriors Weekly, which is a piece I write for Warriors World. And each one of those is going to come out Monday. So after this 30-60 or 30-90, depending on the case, you can read those the next day. They should be out by the time most people listen to this.
Awesome. All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. An iTunes rating or ranking is always highly appreciated. Or even a review, because rating and ranking are the same thing. I screwed that up on closing for the last one, too. My Facebook page at NateDuncanNBA and Danny LaRue NBA for Danny's. Good way to keep up with our writing. And also our treasured sponsors, in this case DraftKings or SeatGeek. Using the CapSpace code, you can get yourself started with those great products as well. So for Danny, this has been the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. We will talk to you all next time.